Call the Senate House Committee meeting to order. Those in attendance are Senators Kelly, Adams, and Fisher. Senator Jones will be joining us shortly as well as Senator Duncan. The beginning of the meeting today, we wanted to meet with the State Board and see if they had any concerns or if we had any concerns. And so what we can do is we can start with meeting the President, and then he can identify who the members are so we all see who you are. And then when Senator Jones comes here, he may want to give some kind of a report, which I understand the board is behind also on the Joint Committee on School Performance. And I understand Senator Adams and Senator Jones were members of that committee. So Senator Jones, I understand, did make a presentation to the House today regarding the committee's conclusions, I guess. So Mr. Gottstein, you want to come up and tell us who all is there? I just met a new one just a while ago, the student rep. And you may want to tell us who all is there. And if you care to come up and join us, if you can all get around, fine. This isn't any sterile or formal situation. Mr. Gottstein.
Don Grace, Vice President. Matt Kinney is the military representative. You said you met Dory Lute, our student representative. Sue Wilkins, Fairbanks, Kathy Ernstine. Of course, Sakaya Gut. Linda Wilson, of course, is taking Rosemary's place at the department. Miss anybody?
We don't know the guy sitting back there with the glasses, three back.
No, you don't know him? Well, if you don't know him yet, I think I'll maintain our secrecy on that.
No, why don't you join us, Mr. Gottstein, and you may want to, you know, give some concerns that you have as a board, and if we have questions.
All right, I guess there are two issues that are our top priority this year. No particular order. One of them, of course, is the work that we've been doing in the Joint Committee on School Performance, doing on the youth at risk issue, which I'm sure Senator Jones will be presenting to you later. The other one is on the funding of the foundation formula, which has now been kept fairly constant at $60,000 a unit for several years, to the point that we're losing teachers. We're going to continue to lose teachers. This morning we spent considerable time considering waivers to the special education regulations so we can accept people that are less qualified, that don't have a special education certificate now. If something isn't done pretty soon, next year or two we'll be waiving the requirements, I suppose, for math and science teachers and so forth. if you look at competitive salaries in other states now, you'll find that when you adjust with the cost of living, Alaska is not higher than other areas. There's no premium in Alaska compared to many of the other states now. While we've been relatively fixed or having modest increases, other states have been increasing 10-11% a year for a number of years. It was set off in, I think it was 83, when the report on a nation at risk came out. It suggested that once something was done about teacher salary, it was sometimes referred to as the first wave of school reform, but it had an impact around the nation, and a lot of districts and schools have been raising taxes and raising teachers' salary to the point that Alaska has got to take it into consideration now if we're going to be able to attract the teachers that we need to run the schools. So those are really probably the two major issues that we as a state have got to deal with, I think. We've got to do something to take care of those kids that aren't doing well in school, and I'll be happy to address that issue when the Joint Committee of the Legislature's report is presented to me.
Well, I have a question. Have you, you're talking about you have to raise the income level to get qualified teachers. Now, special ed is kind of unique because they can't get them anywhere in the country. As I understand, special ed, physical therapist, occupational therapist are hard to get. Did you discuss at all about changing the pay scale to allow people of these occupations a different salary, let's say, than the, quote, every other teacher?
Well, as you know, we don't set pay scales. You know, I'd be, if you want to discuss the issue of statewide salary negotiations, I'd be happy to talk to you about that, because I think that does solve a lot of problems for everybody. But we don't set salary schedules.
No, would you object to, would you support a proposal which would allow certain educational professionals to get a higher salary than, instead of being locked into based on longevity?
It seems to me that schools in Alaska have got to address the marketplace for teachers just like they do for everything else. I think you're going to have to pay whatever it takes to attract good teachers up here. And whether it's special ed or anything else, the fact is that it used to be possible to hire those teachers up here, and now it's not possible. And I think that's an indication of what's going on. It's not just that they're a separate category. You're correct that there is a shortage in the country, but there's also a shortage of math and science teachers. And so that's why I predict that it won't be long before you're going to be addressing the issue of other teachers' salaries. Now, whether there should be different pay scale for math and science and special ed, I don't know. To some extent, the negotiations, I think, have to be determined.
Senator Adams?
Yes. Senate Bill number 15, a right to strike. Does the board have a plan to replace the teachers that strike so we can continue the education of our youth, whether it's in Kotzebue, Bear, or in Anchorage?
You're going to regret coming.
It's a serious issue that you need.
But it's not an issue that the state board has any way to deal with. The board has taken the position that they support the teachers' right to strike because there does need to be some finality to the bargaining process that doesn't exist today.
Finality is a word that people hide behind. I mean, it's...
I don't. But you have to understand, I was advocating this when teachers were supporting binding arbitration, which I didn't support.
On a different topic. Mm-hmm. School performance has about 4 pieces of legislation. Had you had a chance to review them? And yes. Does the board support them?
We do. Very much so. This is an area that I think we talked about a year ago, that the board, maybe 2 years ago, said is the number one priority in the state to find some way to start dealing with these children that aren't doing well at school, that are coming to school unprepared. And I'm sure you'll hear from either Al or Senator Jones that the program has been developed by the Joint Committee. And I hate to take their thunder. I'd be glad to testify after Al and Senator Jones make their presentation. But
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Have those bills been introduced yet?
I don't know. Senator Adams.
No. I thought they were supposed to be by school performance on both sides. I don't know the answer to that.
We're in the 50th day of session, and we've yet to see the bills.
That's correct.
Bernie, I have a question. On the absentees, or this teacher shortage for next session, how much of that has been generated by this early retirement program, do you think? Has that been a significant factor?
I don't know how to quantify it. You can't help but think it's part of the problem. As far as I'm concerned, it was a terrible idea. I mean, we don't have enough teachers, and to encourage teachers to retire early made no sense to me at all. I mean, I think it was a false comment.
But up until this year, I've never been told that we don't have enough teachers. I mean,
the fact is that
that
was true a couple of years ago. That's the point. I mean, the situation is changing. It doesn't take very long when you're falling behind 10% a year or so, or when other areas are moving ahead of 10% a year, to lose that premium that we once had. And I don't think you'll hear that there's a problem today in Anchorage. I doubt that there is. But I think there's a serious problem in many of the areas of the state, and I think it's not going to be long before you'll see it in Anchorage unless something is done.
But I think, though, on that, the district did not have to allow everybody the early retirement. He just walks in at the right time. But they, if there's a scarcity out there, say for science teachers, I think they could have just as well said that the science teachers are not eligible for early retirement. So you would think the districts would look at this and maybe decide to keep some of the good teachers that they did have.
budget.
Bernie, what's the board's position on the education endowment?
We're supporting it.
Shelley, you're here. Just a little longer. Senator Duncan has a question. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to be a comment on early retirement.
No, I just wanted to ask Bernie what comment was. I didn't hear it.
If I can quote myself, I said I thought it was a terrible idea because there's a shortage of teachers, and in the face of a shortage of teachers, to encourage teachers to retire early is, I think, is.
Well, when we pass.
And I know it's.
Senator Duncan, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you know, there may be a shortage of teachers, Barney, and I don't want to get an argument on this, but, you know, what I keep hearing from school districts across this state is that they want local control and they want the ability to make their own decisions. And the early retirement program, as we passed it, was the ultimate in local control. First of all, no school district in this state had to participate in early retirement. It was their decision to, whether they wanted to or not participate. Certain ones did, certain ones didn't. And even if they decided to participate, it didn't mean that they were mandated to allow anybody to retire. So I guess, you know, to put it very bluntly, if school boards don't have the, I'm trying to think of a nice term here, fortitude to say, to make a local decision as to whether they want to first participate or not, and then secondly allow teachers, you know, that's their fault. I kind of personally don't know why the State Board of Education is coming here to take a position on that.
We didn't come here to take. Somebody asked me a question, and I either had to say no, I declined to comment, or I had to give my opinion.
And the reason I asked the question is because now it would appear that we've got a serious shortage of teachers in some areas of Alaska, which surprised me because up until this year I hadn't heard that. Beforehand, we'd always had no trouble attracting teachers. There was always hundreds, if not thousands, wanting to come to Alaska to teach every year, and obviously things have changed. But when we passed RIP, what, 2-3 years ago, you know, there was no, at that time, perception
that's
of a
true.
Teacher shortage.
That's true.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chairman, that most school districts I talked to have found the program to be beneficial. The school boards, for one, and this is not an NEA position, but the school boards don't like tenure, for one, right? And they've got people sitting there for 15, 16, 17 years that they can't get rid of, and they found a way to get rid of them through early retirement. I haven't heard too much griping about it. Quite honestly, I think it's been more beneficial than non-beneficial, and again, it's local control. It's just, school districts can do what they need to do. I don't think it's been the cause of teacher shortages in this state, personally.
I think one of the problems, not to get into the debate, is along with the 17-year teacher that they wanted to get rid of in the same academic discipline, the 17-year teacher that they didn't want to get rid of also went, and that was where I think probably the problem came back.
But they had the option to say no.
On a single basis would be pretty difficult, though. I think to say that you're two history teachers, we're going to let you take it and you not.
See
what you did, you caused all this trouble.
They had the ability to say no.
Well, I think I voted in favor of that call.
I think we all did.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but I mean, it always takes somebody to start it, and he had to start it, see, so.
Well, I think the school board should spend more time on trying to resolve the problems of youth at risk and a lot of other things instead of coming in and commenting on early retirement programs.
See what you got me into?
We didn't think you were commenting on that.
I've been working on trying to solve the problem of youth at risk for 2 years, and I met with the school board and met with Barney, and they couldn't get anybody off the dime here, it didn't seem like. Several weeks ago, all of a sudden, they decided that they had an idea that they were going to pursue after I had legislation for 2 years, and I'm kind of hurt to that.
I understand you, but I don't think you're represented either accurately or fairly.
Well, can we tell you something else, Mr. Chairman?
Hold on. This is getting better. If anybody cares to give support, they're all staying back there.
We've been working on the at-risk problem. It's been the number one priority of the board for 2.5 years. We've had hearings around the state. We've brought people in from around the states to help us think through the problem, what needed to be done. So I think it's not accurate to say that we're coming to the issue in the last 2 weeks.
No, Mr. Chairman, probably wasn't accurate to say that, although I've also been working on that issue and appeared at the board several times asking for your help and your consideration. What hurt me is when you finally decided to jump in the game with some legislation, you acted like it was something new had just surfaced on a House bill and nothing had been done on that issue prior. And I had different communication with the commissioner and with the board, and I'm still a little frustrated and upset about that. Mr. Gray was in the office when that conversation came about.
when the Joint Committee on School Performance decided to come forward with a package that essentially did a number of things that had been recommended by school boards and professional educators and the research literature that was available, we decided that that was a good vehicle to support.
We need to get back to something else that, you had mentioned, the waivers for special ed. I would assume other districts in other states are going to have to do the same thing. If there's no teachers there nationwide, I would assume they're going to have to do the same thing. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but do you anticipate doing it this year?
Yeah, we're going to put out regulations probably later this week for public comment that will allow temporary certification of teachers that have a plan to get their certificate within 3 years, I believe it is.
But they would be current teachers. That
have yes, they would, have a, Class A certificate, but they wouldn't have a special ed endorsement.
Okay, let me ask you about another thing. We just passed a bill out of here the other day. We changed corporal punishment to corporal corrections. And do you still feel, I don't know whether it was through the legislature, but the feeling was that, the Regulation Review Committee should have looked at the regulation. They didn't. And so, at least out of this, committee, when a new term, instead of punishment, we use the word corrections. So I don't know if that's going to change anything in your, as far as the state board. I'm not even sure if we could see the legislature. Or whether the governor would even let it become law. But it was something that was of concern by some legislators that at least private schools should be allowed to do this.
There's nothing that prevents them now.
Okay, private well, the feeling schools. Is that, there is an impediment out there. Maybe working through the commissioner, they can remove that impediment.
I don't believe that's accurate. I don't believe that there's anything that prevents private schools from having policy on corporal punishment.
You're interpreting it as meaning only public schools.
Right.
Okay. Any? See what I do. Okay. Any other questions or any? Same. I have any comments. This is your last crack at us. I mean, you can. Don't let him up here all by himself. Jeez.
I have one.
Senator Adams?
Does the board have a policy regarding disasters, schools that burnt or roofs that fallen?
Yeah, we're against them.
Very good, sir. Luke's against school boards, too.
Hey, Luke, you're...
He's taking notes over there.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think House Bill 37 that was just passed that sets up an orderly process in the department really and attempts to prioritize the needs in the state hopefully will address that issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I don't. I was hoping Senator Jones would be here so he could give some report. What did he say? He was on his way or was when you're going to meet today yet and then tomorrow? You have 2 days?
Yeah, we'll be meeting, not anymore today.
Well, what we can do, hopefully Senator Jones will give us a report when he does come in, if he comes in. In the meantime, instead of having you folks all sit and wait, I think you'll find that this committee is pretty much pro-education, I would think. And we are going to, for your information, we're going to be going on the endowment. I think you'll agree with that one. March the 9th, we're going to be in Kodiak. March the 10th, we're going to be in Kenai. March the 17th, Fairbanks. And March the 24th, Anchorage. So, and there is interest. And by the way, these are all Saturdays. And or in the Friday and Saturday, 2 days, we don't have to be here at all. So there is interest by this committee, which is very encouraging.
It is.
So if you have people out there, let us hear from them. And not only so much as on that, if take it or leave it, maybe there's a way to make it better. I mean, what we're hearing is the resentment that's out there, the opposition is regarding the permanent dividend check. So there might be another way to have the endowment disregard that portion, but come up with the money some other way. And that's one of the things we're looking at, too, to see if there's another answer out there. And I know in my district, just for your information, a survey that was done by Hallenthal, which is a recognized pollster, I guess, 70% against the endowment. which is really pretty high. And it's because of the tapping of the government fund. So there might be another avenue out there, and I know Al has some, I'm sure Senator Duncan might have some ideas, and hopefully what comes out of this committee is something that's good for the, that will stand the test at the polls, is what we're looking at.
Good. That's encouraging news. I just like to add in closing that we're strongly supportive of the work that the Joint Committee on School Performance did and the recommendations they've come forward with. They've identified early childhood education as really the number one area that needs to be addressed. We agree with that. I think the research seems to support that, and educators around the state seem to say that this is the area that needs primary attention. It's a proven program. The Head Start program has now been in place for 25 years, maybe, and it's been there long enough that results are seen. And what I'm hoping this legislation would do and the funding from it will do is to fully fund all of the children that are in need of help from Head Start type programs, which are community and family-based programs.
Thanks. If anybody else wants to ask or tell, this is the only chance you get to ask us something and put us on the hot seat. Not that we'd answer it, but maybe we'd want to take a stab at it. The commissioner's awful quiet back there, so I guess he's satisfied.
I'm just listening.
Oh, you're just looking. Okay, well, go ahead.
Yeah, one issue, I'm actually not the qualified one to speak to this, but Major Kenny would be, and that is the situation developed on base schools and school construction. Matt, if you can explain that, because as I understand it, the problem really comes down to in the future here, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, potential of losing part of the PL 874 funding because of deterioration of some of the schools on bases where the children would then go to local schools, and then they lose a super stat. Matt, you're much better explaining this thing.
Hey, come on up, sit down.
Thank you. We have about 5,500 elementary school children who are on the base in Post in Alaska, the Fairbanks and the Omendorf area. They're in 18 schools, all of which were built in the late 50s, early 60s. The first one of those schools, McKinley, had just been condemned up at Fort Wainwright. The reason for that is that over the past 25 years or so, there hasn't been any major construction, repair, or new schools. The schools are owned by the U.S. Department of Education. They sit on DOD property. They are run by the municipalities under contract with the state. The state hasn't repaired them because they're owned by the feds, and the feds haven't had money to give to the state. So we've been locked into a triangular relationship that hasn't gone anywhere for years. The problem we have at Wainwright is immediate because we just moved the headquarters of the 6th Infantry Division up there from the Anchorage area. This happens at the same time that they condemned one of their schools. So we're going to bus kids off of the post onto the schools in Fairbanks. That increases their teacher-student ratio, whatever. But in the long term, we haven't found a way of working around this bureaucratic logjam. The result of that will be, since all these schools were constructed in about the same time, and we've just gone through condemning the first one, in the immediate future, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years, if we can't find an accommodation for dealing with these schools, we will be moving children onto the local municipalities as these schools start dropping out. The state now gets $20 million a year in 874 money because they are classified as a super A status. The state applies to the feds for this money and it comes in. And we have had some problems with the state applying. Normally the municipalities under the law do that applying. The state's done it traditionally since 1975, ever since we formed a statewide district. There is a way to circumvent the Federal Department of Education from stopping us getting into that status if they don't let us apply, and that's to create local education agencies, or essentially school districts on paper that are 100% military. So we can continue to get that status even under worst case, except We can't have a local education agency with no schools and no children, i.e. if they have all been condemned and the kids have all been moved into the municipalities. The difference being we would drop from $20 million a year down to $12 million a year in 874 money coming into us under that source. Now that's on the financial side. Obviously, the military is concerned with the quality of life side. It's very difficult for them to not form the perception that the municipalities have bigger, better, and more up-to-date schools, which they obviously have. The military goes down and it draws down now. I would not say that Alaska is scheduled to gain any new units or forces, because there hasn't been any announcements on anything like that whatsoever. But we have announced we're closing three bases in Korea, a number in Germany, three or four in England, and although the military is going through a reduction over 5 years of 35 to 40% probably of its total size, there's going to be relocations taking place. Alaska always has a geographical significance in that because you can jump east or west from here. But some of the things that are considered in that are the quality of life issues, like medical, education, and other things. Geography can be obviously offset by political means, and that's just one of our factors. We're concerned with our families, we're concerned with the condition of the schools, which now I've reached a point where we finally condemned one of them, and we're concerned with the fact that this logjam has not been broken for well over 20 years. Since it's improbable that the U.S. Department of Education will ever succeed in getting more money to do this, since the one realistic attempt to solve the problem nationwide was run by Senator Dole, and that was the Dole Commission report. The schools in Kansas have been mysteriously fixed by the U.S. Department of Education in the interim, and Senator Dole doesn't have the same intensity he once did. It's one of the issues the military is very concerned with. And of this concern, the one immediate issue is one school at Fort Wainwright. If then we can perhaps get all the concerned parties together, the U.S. Department of Education, Department of Defense, the state, others, we might be able to work out something to do more logically. And that one school at Fort Wainwright may show up as an addition to Senate Bill 38. Senator Frank is working on that. And that's the background on it, is that there doesn't seem to be any other way of doing it, and we are concerned with the implications of not having a new school at Fort Wainwright. There is, in essence, no local control that can be used to solve that problem.
What would you do in ADAC? I mean, that's all federal. I mean, what would you do there if the building got to the point where you'd condemn it? I mean, the federal government would have to do it if we don't do it, right?
I don't know if the the specifics on ADAC. There was one replaced school in the interim from 1975 until the current time, and that was because it burned down. And that was done with federal money as a special option. But we wouldn't necessarily want to burn the rest down because that proved to be a successful method.
Would other states, I would assume other states have the same problem. What are they doing? Are they using some other 874 monies for construction also?
The state that I've heard about most recently was Washington State, and they received appropriations through their legislators in Washington, D.C. to correct the school situations. The Air Force also has set a precedent by spending some Air Force funds on repairing or building new schools.
But they're not using their own state money, though, for construction?
No.
I think the Senate Bill 38 is all state money.
I believe it is. I think part of that is that the study at Wainwright actually, to permanently fix the problem at Wainwright, at least for the foreseeable future, is to build two new schools there. And Senator Stevens' office has been approached to try to obtain supplemental funding on the federal side for one of the schools and the state for the second.
Do you have any idea how much money for the state? I mean, we're going to look at that and find it.
Okay, roughly, these figures come from a study that was commissioned by Fairbanks. And the initial study showed that it would be two schools at Wainwright at about $6.9 million apiece. I understand that there's been an update to that study, but it should be in the same area. Yes. Any questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anybody else? Well, seeing no one, I want to thank you all for coming. I don't know if what was accomplished, I mean, if you had to put a bottom line on it, but I think at least we saw that there might be a problem with teachers. We won't be shocked if all of a sudden we see social studies teachers teaching special ed, knowing that may come along. And also, the salaries, I don't know.
I know Mr. Gussie had indicated maybe we ought to look at sometimes a statewide salary schedule. And maybe that is the answer. I don't know. Maybe something we ought to look at as the legislature. At least I know one thing from our district that would do away with what I live, heartburn that happens when contracts are up again for renegotiations. And I didn't hear anything on corporal punishment versus corporal corrections. I thought that would be the hot topic, so I scratched that one. You heard on that one. So Lorna, yes.
Oh, just a comment on the special ed waiver discussions. One of the other important provisions in that would be that a person who would be applying for a waiver not only would have to be a certified teacher already, but would also have to take a certain number of credit hours in special education. So they're not just coming in cold. Mm-hmm. We don't want to put anybody before kids who doesn't have the special training that, that's called for here. So we're using a pattern that had been used in the past. Having some training and then have a plan where they'll complete the required training within 3 years.
So you're given 3 years for credentials.
Yeah, but it would be that they'd have to have some training in advance of that. That's what we're looking at right now as a possibility.
Would Alaska University be tied in so that people wouldn't have to go outside to get that training?
I don't know. That's a good question. Where the training, I'm not certain what the capacity is for the University of Alaska, either in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Southeast, to deliver that program. I'm not sure. I think part of it could be. I don't know if the whole program could be or not.
I would hope that we could do it here in the state. Yes?
One other comment, sir, on the schools, on the military installations. Everyone seems to be in common agreement that they are fixed up to local standards or state standards, or new ones are built, they would be transferred to the state. We would get the U.S. Department of Education out of it personally. So then it would become more locally controlled.
The building would become state property,
state
on federal land.
That's right. The state would lease, the federal land would be leased indefinitely for maybe $1 or 100 years or whatever the accommodation normally is for that. But that the schools would be owned by the state or by the local municipality. That would be up to the state to decide. But we would get the people in Washington out of business.
Let me ask you this. I'm not familiar with the way military schools operate, but do people that are not living on base, not military, are those kids coming into the base schools now, or do you have to be, is the criteria you have to be personnel some?
The criteria is not that you have to be, but in reality, that's the way it works out. These schools are located right in our neighborhoods, so the kids walk from their on-base houses right to the schools. Anchorage, I know, uses the music room of one of the schools and buses children onto the base to use those special facilities.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, and we're going to go into some legislation, and we're going to see if we can get a couple of bills out here today. I want to thank you. We're going to take a 5-minute recess. Order. Keep standing at the door, President. We're going to switch the calendar around. We're going to go with SCR 44 first and then SCR 45 second. So before us, we have SCR 44 relating to alcohol-related birth defects awareness week, and we did have Marie Mochman.
Yes.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Marie Mochman. I'm Division Director for the March of Dimes, Regino and Sitka, and I just wanted to go, I had a question that I believe has been answered now. I understand that the date of May 13th to the 19th is Mother's, weekend relating to Mother's Day, something like this. So that was, I was just curious how the date had been chosen. The March of Dimes has a major fundraiser the end of April of every year, and this bill requests that we work, we have appropriate activities involved, and we will certainly do that and see what kind of help we can propose, and we support the bill.
Senator Binkley, welcome.
Thank
question
you,
is, why did you decide May 13th to the 19th to proclaim alcohol-related?
It should be coincide with Mother's Day,
the week
of Mother's Day.
Okay. All right.
Well, we'll rise to the occasion and support this all the way.
Okay, is there anybody else from the general public that wishes to testify in the resolution?
Mike,
we can't close it. Well, what we'll do is we'll close the hearing on that. please start on the next one and bring us back to the table if you want. Okay. We'll just close the hearing on that and move on with SCR 45. And that's before us now. Marie, do you want to testify on that one too?
I just want to let you know that we're supportive. Oh,
okay. I was going to say, I think the message is we just don't, you know, we're okay.
Yeah.
No. Is there anybody else in the general public who wishes to testify on our resolution? I don't know if anybody's against it, to be honest. Okay, we're going to close the hearing on that, and we could get into the other one in a while. We can't take any action over it. We'll open up Senate Bill 44. We'll postpone action on this when we get a quorum. But
Mr. Chairman, for, yes. For the public, that SCR 44 and 45 action will be taken as soon as
we get a quorum. So we're just going to wait. We can't take any action. But we'll go on with Senate Bill 414 and take testimony at this point. So Senate Bill 414 is before us. Senator Binkley, you're the prime sponsor. So you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what this bill does allow a mechanism to get pregnant persons into a treatment program only during the most severe cases of abuse of alcohol during pregnancy. I think you've probably heard testimony before I arrived of some of the difficulties.
Senator Binkley, we haven't gotten into this before you arrived. We held this to the end of the calendar.
I see. Okay, I appreciate it.
So
well, just generally about fetal alcohol syndrome and some of the debilitating results of people abusing alcohol during pregnancy. Can cause severe mental retardation and physical birth defects. It's the leading cause of mental retardation. The costs associated with that, the actual fiscal costs, besides the social consequences, are enormous. Each fetal alcohol syndrome child that's born and lives over its lifetime will cost us, the public, about $1.4 million. And that's a huge burden for the public fiscal burden for the public to bear, besides the social costs associated with caring for many of these children and, of course, as they turn into adults over their lifetime. And in many cases, you find people who have fetal alcohol syndrome, children, and continue to have children and continue to abuse alcohol during their pregnancy. And at some point, we have several different statistics, but for the information of the committee, the record holder in Alaska has had 7 fetal alcohol syndrome children. All of those are out in foster homes around the state. Other people are having to bear the responsibility of that person's abuse of alcohol during their pregnancy. And at some point, the society has to step in and say, enough is enough. We're not going to continue to bear the costs of this. And this would allow an appeal to the judicial system before a judge to have that woman mandated to go to treatment. And the first review by the judge would mandate, I think, 30 days treatment. If after 30 days, they were not responding to treatment, you could go back to the court system before the judge and request another 30 days of treatment. If they still were not responding, and hopefully after 30 days of treatment, that they would respond to that and not continue to abuse themselves and the fetus. And then, of course, provisions for another 30 days if they weren't. And then the third course of action would be for the term of the pregnancy until the pregnancy was completed. And so I just feel that at some point we have to, as a society, say enough is enough, that we're not going to allow a person to abuse the fetus and to really, in effect, tie a ball and chain around that baby's leg and have them drag that with them for the rest of their life. It's not fair, in my opinion, to really commit somebody to a lifetime of misery because somebody wants to overindulge and abuse alcohol during the pregnancy, particularly when other people have to bear the cost of that. And so this would allow the court system to step in and say, hey, society's right, and the right of that fetus is more important than your personal right to abuse alcohol. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd open up
the question. The question, I think when this first came up, people thought that a pregnant woman walks out of the bar and right away somebody said, out of a bar and says, you're pregnant, we're going to haul you in. this has to be done by a petition through the court, right?
Exactly.
And it has to be a relative, a spouse, or, I mean, it just can't be John Q. Public sitting on the street and just says, oh, I think we're going to just sign something and give it to the judge in a way. So it's pretty restrictive, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's been portrayed that way, I think, with a lot of groups that, you know, this, you're going to have police sweeping through bars looking for pregnant women and handcuff them and take them off to jail or something. It's not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, there's due process, there's hearings, there's a defense, there's an appeal process, there's all the safeguards of our judicial system and our Constitution would protect an individual from any kind of overzealous enforcement of this.
Yes, Senator Adams.
I, along with Senator Bigley, is co-sponsor of this bill. But Senator, you know, one of the things on research of this bill, Hess came out against this bill on two reasons. That since most of the damage results in the first trimester, that by the time a woman has committed, the damage was done. And the second thing they have stated, that it might discourage women from seeking medical assistance if they knew they might get committed. Mm-hmm. What is your comments on these two?
Well, the first one, as far as the extent of damages over the term of the pregnancy, it's true that most of the physical damage is done in the first trimester, the first 3 months of pregnancy. That's when you get the physical defects, you know, the facial defects, many of the organs that are forming are defected if there's drinking during that first 3 months. But one organ that is forming during the entire pregnancy is the brain. And the brain is what's most affected by the toxins and alcohol during pregnancy. So it not, you know, it continues to develop over the entire 9 months of pregnancy. And the toxins and alcohol continue to affect the development of the brain over the entire pregnancy. So it's true that you might not have the physical deformities if, you know, as a result of not drinking beyond the first trimester. But it doesn't apply to the brain, which is the most sensitive and complicated organ that there is, really. And so I think that the medical research and facts bear out that argument really isn't valid. And the other one, Senator Adams, was?
That it might discourage women from seeking medical assistance if they knew they might be committed.
Right. You know, as I pointed out, this would be only in the most grievous cases, only where a woman has had a history of having fetal alcohol syndrome children, of having of continually abusing alcohol during pregnancy. And some of the comments that we got from actual case files of some of those women show that it really doesn't matter, that they aren't responding to normal persuasion to going into treatment or to prenatal care, of taking care of themselves. They know the harm that's being done. But they don't care. You know, here are some of the comments. This was from a quote from one lady who said, I just want more children. She didn't care. She refused intervention by medical social services personnel in various agencies. She's known to hide out from DFYS. Well, you know, there's no threat of commitment now, and yet these people are continuing to ignore any kind of prenatal care, are completely getting away from it. Here's another one. Mind your own business. I have no intention of stopping drinking. Well, these same women, you know, are already saying, hey, it's none of your business. I can drink all I want, and it's none of your business what the effect's going to be of it. So those people aren't the ones who are going to say, well, because now there's a commitment statute, I'm going to change my patterns, or I'm not going to come into contact with these people. You know, they're not getting treatment. They're not getting into a treatment program anyhow. The one lady that's got 7 fetal alcohol syndrome children, you know, she's got the same attitude. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. You can talk about prenatal care all you want till you're blue in the face. She's not going to go into treatment.
And Sam, these are the same people that wouldn't even object to sterilization, voluntary sterilization, right? No, they want to have the kids, right? I mean, you couldn't talk a person like that and say, well, did you ever consider sterilization? They wouldn't.
No, I don't think they would respond to that. Apparently, I don't know if they've ever been asked that.
I don't know. Yeah.
Last one is just reading up our backup. It says the public defenders on February fetus, and the public defenders say it will then cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've seen
Yeah, I just saw that before I came down here. I think they just came out with that today. I don't think it's unconstitutional at all. I mean, we have commitment statutes right now. You know, the judge can, there's a process by which a person who is likely to hurt themselves can be taken before a court and committed to treatment. But we don't have any mechanism that recognizes the damage to the unborn child. And this would recommend that, or would recognize that.
Mr. Chairman, I know this goes through two of the committees,
Judiciary, Finance. Just let me ask the Senator something. If you have a pregnant woman with children, who takes care of the kids while she's, let's assume they are kids at home, mm-hmm. wouldn't there be a foster care overload or something, because the children have to be taken care of by somebody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you thought, and apparently SC Health and Social Service gave it zero fiscal limit for at least the first year. I don't know if you give any thought to that, what happens to the other children. I would assume a lot of these have children anyhow.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the arrangements would be to take care of the kids while a person went into treatment.
Okay, and then I would assume there's a pregnancy test given to make sure the woman, in fact, is pregnant, which would be
something. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they'd have to, you know, have, you know, evidence that she was pregnant, that... more than likely she had a history of fetal alcohol syndrome children. You know, there'd have to be evidence presented at the trial that or at the hearing that she was abusing alcohol, and medical authorities who would have to testify of the damage that was being done to the fetus.
Okay, I think the main thing is the perception out there that this is wholesale, you know, you're going to be putting women into custody wholesale.
Yeah.
But I think people need to read the first sentence.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very restrictive, where it says that after a hearing initiated by a petitioner, spouse or guardian or relative.
Right.
And it might have to be some language change. It doesn't make sense the way it's said, though. Or guardian, a relative. See what I mean? It looks like the certifying physician is one that can also bring the initiated hearing. So somehow.
See, it could be a physician if the doctor knows, for example, that a person is using alcohol, then they can petition the court.
The administrator in charge of the public treatment facility wouldn't initiate anything, would they? I mean, because there would be no reason for the woman to go there unless somebody...
Well, maybe they knew. Maybe, for example, there was a woman who was in a treatment program.
Well, that's how you...
For example. And yet she was not... she was going to leave the program, or she wasn't... or she left the program for some reason, but was continuing to abuse alcohol. Then at least they could... I think the main thing is anybody who has... professional knowledge of the abuse going on would have that opportunity to petition the court.
Okay. Does the department want to say anything in behalf or against the proposed legislation?
I think they're supporting the legislation, Mr. Chairman.
I would think so, because they, you know, I just looked at the zero fiscal, so I assume that that's their way of saying
it. Yeah. My name is Dwayne. Pretty reasonable people to deal with, I hope so.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dwayne Peoples. I'm not the expert in this field. Susan Perry, the FAST coordinator in Anchorage, is far more in-depth knowledge on this subject, and I believe you tried to arrange a teleconference with her. I am available for some questions on the degree that I am familiar with. The department sympathizes with the content or the intent of this bill and recognizes the significant problem FAST is creating. The department did raise a couple issues in its position paper. I would leave it at that unless you have some questions.
I have a question. What's the department's position on taking care of fetus, prenatal care? Because this came up with the Children's Commission, and there's a serious concern out there. It has nothing to do with abortion, but the point is, if the fetus doesn't have any status at all, why are we putting money in any prenatal programs?
I really am not familiar and comfortable responding to that as the department's position. I've never really dealt with it.
Okay, well, we're going to, it goes to Judiciary next and then to Finance next, so those kinds of things, I would hope the department would be ready to respond to, you know, just what is the right of a fetus. And I think we need to get a position from the department. So any questions? Any other questions? Any
questions?
Okay, Marie, did you want to... You sign up for everything here. I don't know. Today must be March of Dimes Day.
I guess I'll again for the record. My name is Marie Montman. I'm Division Director for the March of Dimes for Juneau and Sitka. As you know, one of our main concerns is resolving the FAS problem. And we note the merits of the bill, but my concern is in the implementation stage. In Juneau and Sitka, as you may realize, we have a severe shortage of in-house treatment facilities. Juneau Recovery Unit, JRU, in Juneau here has 11 beds for in-house with 3-month waiting list. In Sitka, the Alcohol Therapy Service, ATS, has consistently been short-funded until they now have 6 beds where they previously had 16, and they have a 2.5-month waiting list. Well, since pregnancies are time-restricted, would women of Juneau and Sitka in the surrounding southeast areas be required to leave a town for the minimum of 30 days if they were committed? It's a question I'd be interested in at some point knowing the answer to. The concern is the financial effect on the family and the loss of family support through the treatment, that sort of thing. And also, could this bill accommodate a fiscal note that would allow for expansion of the JRU and ATS facilities? As I understand it, JRU facilities, they have no room for bed expansion. However, they would need a new facility. But the, ATS, since they have been underfunded or been reduced in their beds, they have the facility and space for beds. They just don't have the money. Those are my concerns.
Are you in support of the bill or opposed to the bill?
Well, at this point, we basically have to be in support, but those are some concerns that...
Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the other pieces of legislation that I hope the committee will deal with shortly is Senate Bill 407, which sets a priority relating to treatment of persons who are pregnant. Just as Marie pointed out, there is a long waiting list at some of these facilities. This would say that whenever there are state funds involved in an alcohol treatment facility, that pregnant persons get a priority in that. If there's a 3-month waiting period and there's a pregnant person who wants to go into treatment, they go to the head of the line, that they don't wait and 3 months later they're able to get into the program, because obviously, as she pointed out, there's some time constraints that involved in treating a person who's pregnant. And so that's kind of a part of the package, is to give that priority to pregnant persons.
Okay, any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jay Leiby from Health and Social Services, and I just wanted to make a point. We did put in a zero fiscal note. In the backup in the fiscal note, we did mention that it's a zero fiscal note, not because there are enough services out there, but because of the waiting list and the difficulty that people have had in dealing with the current commitment law, that we're not, because of the existing beds out there, that we're already paying for. If a pregnant woman is committed under this law, she'll probably take the place or fill a bed that we're currently paying for. Mm-hmm. So it's a zero fiscal note, but we don't want to leave the impression there is no need for expanded services out there, because there certainly is. And from that point of view, it's sort of a cynical fiscal note, but we felt that was necessary.
Any questions? Anybody else care to testify? Nobody from the various commissions?
Okay, the public hearing is closed. We do have a quorum. What is the wish of the committee on Senate Bill 414?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams.
I move that we move up Senate Bill number 414 out of the committee with individual recommendations, send it on to its next committee, which is Judiciary.
Any objections? Okay, the bill is out of committee with individual recommendations. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams.
We also took up Senate Concurrent Resolution number 44. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Concurrent Resolution 44 be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Okay, hearing none, SCR 44 is out of committee with individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, we also took up Senate Concurrent Resolution number 45. I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Concurrent Resolution number 45 be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? The SDR 45 is out of committee with individual recommendations. There's nothing else before the body, but you do have the March 10th Kodiak, 9th one's Kodiak, 10th one Kenai, 17th Fairbanks, 24th Anchorage, and I think we're going to have a quorum at all those meetings. So with that, we're going to adjourn.